everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the podcast, Free to a Good Home. My name is Michael Hing, and joining me, as always, is a man who recently went viral based on the jokes of The Simpsons. It's Benjamin Jenkins. Hello, Ben. How are you?
God, what a brutal introduction that is. Hey, Hing, can I ask, and you can be honest with us, because, you know, all friends here. That intro sounded a lot to me before you got to my thing, like you'd forgotten what podcast you were recording.
Yes.
You started very, very confident, and then you just threw in a completely unnecessary, the podcast called, which you are listening to, which I will get to.
Momentarily thinking we could have been recording one of our Patreon episodes, and I wanted to make sure we weren't. But the reason I knew we weren't, Ben, the reason I knew we were recording a regular Free to a Good Home episode is because we are joined today by I think 3 or 4 time guest now, basically a regular co-host of sorts. He shouldn't be here. he's a delightful podcaster in his own right. All the way from, I want to say, Auckland, New Zealand, in the same way that I tried to guess Guy Montgomery's location and offended him by doing it. It is Tim Batt. Hello, Tim. How are you?
Hang, I'm great. I'm happy to report I am delightful and in Auckland. And even if you got it wrong, I'm not going to be a dick about it, unlike Guy Montgomery, that piece of shit.
He said he was reporting, the guy was reporting from the very bowels of hell itself. So
yeah,
you can see why Guy got pissy about that.
Christ.
Yeah, I described Guy Montgomery as, I think, fighting for the prophet in the Levant, I think I described it as. I think he joined ISIS or something. And then he got very snippy about that. Yeah.
That is classic him.
Do you reckon because Guy is an improviser really at heart, I feel like it's kind of in his marrow. Do you reckon if we started like a thing that we said that he was Satan's own podcaster and we really tried to make that stick, that he'd kind of yes and that point where
you think it's going to be sweet because Guy's such a fun loving dude and he does so much improv, but every time I introduce him on stage when we're doing lineup shows and I'm hosting, We were both doing it for a while and he stopped doing it, but I still do it to him. I give him the worst introduction I can think of. So I'm like, your next act is, he's just started comedy and he hasn't quite realized that he doesn't have the chops yet. But if you would be kind enough to indulge this next guy for 12 minutes, I'd be grateful. Here is an awful man called Guy Montgomery. And he comes on and he's no longer kind of rolling with it the same way he used to.
You know what you should do next time? You should say that he's somebody who went viral because of jokes from The Simpsons.
That's how you take a guy down.
You know, I helped with those jokes from The Simpsons, though.
Yeah, you did. I helped with that. I mean, not, let's be clear. Not when they were written back in the 90s. You had very little to do with that. So for those of you who don't know, I've just put together a thing for my newsletter of just asking all the funny people I knew what their favorite Simpsons gag was. Just thought it'd be a nice thing for people to read. Mm. And it rendered my Twitter basically unusable for at least a day and a half. And I don't know why I didn't foresee this, but like if it got any traction at all, the way it was going to get traction was by people being like, what about this joke? What about that joke? Which I can't be mad about. You know what I mean? Like, I shouldn't be upset about it, but yeah, here I am.
Nah, man, you're operating on like derivatives market of comedy now. So all bets are off. Things are going to swing wildly.
The credit default swaps of the.
Exactly.
If you were to go viral twice in your life, though, Ben, the secondary thing you potentially would go viral for is a new podcast series that you have promised, that you and I have promised to do if our Patreon reaches a certain amount of money.
Promise. And do you know what's funny, Hing? Mm. When we promised that, I made a little note because when we're doing pods now, I just make little notes for edit points just on a little piece of paper. And when I said if we reach a certain point on Patreon and gave that number as $1,500 a month, that we would make a limited multi-part series about the McDonald's Land extended universe.
Yes.
I made a note that said take out ? Because I didn't really want to commit ourselves to doing that.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, but you see, what happens is, Hing, I lost that piece of paper and I put it out on the internet and now we're committed to doing it. So, Tim, we did a Patreon exclusive episode that really did our first deep dive into the McDonald's Land lore.
What is that?
I think we I'm sure you had this in New Zealand. Do you remember when McDonald's used to have a whole associated cast of characters?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Not just the Hamburglar, not just Ronald, but we're also talking like tier two ones like Birdie the Bird.
Yeah, and there was a fucking pirate and like a bunch of mops, different coloured mops.
There was a pirate, yes.
Yeah, there was a pirate, a bunch of mops. We found out there was a professor. Anyway, Hing and I had such fun discussing it that in a fit of hubris, I said that if our Patreon gets to a certain level, we'll create a brand new podcast about it. Mm. And, you know, we're not like at panic stations yet, Michael. Like, I think I said 1500, our Patreon's at around 700. When we get, I think when we crack a thou, that's when I'm going to start actively discouraging people from supporting us.
It's a rich vein, man. I've heard some dark shit about the origin story of Grimace. Like, hand on heart. Apparently, it's got some weird racial undertones and shit. It's very bad and very bleak. Wow. Yeah.
See, that's precisely the sort of thing I don't want to spend any time interrogating.
Well, this is a podcast where we go through the week's classifieds and find the best and worst things to talk about. Ben, did you want to start with a snack report, though? I'll throw it to it because even though I hate the snack report, you did earlier today say you really wanted to do one.
Well, I wanted to do one for two reasons. One, because it's a snack that I don't believe I've ever really given enough credit to. And now saying that out loud, as soon as I started saying that sentence, I realized that I think I've spoken about it at least two occasions, possibly like in the past month. But I have a caramel slice. It's just a delicious kind of regular cafe style caramel slice. And I wanted to bring it up for two reasons. One, because I think I'm starting to have a problem with caramel slices in that I'm eating a caramel slice every single day around about this time.
No, you're not.
Well, not like a whole tray of them. Just like, look, I'll hold it up to the webcam. It's about the size of half a deck of cards.
That's not good. You know what I'm saying? That's, daily?
Yeah, but that's... it's well, entirely... I mean, what is in a caramel slice? It's like condensed milk, caramel, yep. I imagine, a chocolate topping, and a biscuit bottom. That's what it is. Every single one of those things is filled with sugar, Ben. 80 or 90% sugar.
Here's why I'm concerned about my, at the very least, right, if not my health, my attitude toward this delicious treat. Just before I started recording this, I was at the park with my wife and my son. And my son ran kind of head. I'm boasting much. My son ran headlong into another child and just sort of ate shit.
Mo got fucked up by this other kid.
Well, I think Mo fucked himself up trying to fuck up this other kid, if I'm fair. Like, I think the blame rests solely on his shoulders here. Mm. And he just went down. This kid was like the Juggernaut, you know what I mean? Like, he didn't move at all. Or is the Juggernaut the thing that it can't move? I mean, it can't stop moving.
The Juggernaut, my understanding is the Juggernaut cannot be stopped. He's unstoppable. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this was very much a stoppable force meeting a
moving object, which was
moving object.
So Mo went down, and I scooped him up and calmed him down. And then Anya was like, "Give him here." And then while my back was turned, I was just chatting with some people at the park. She came back, and Mo is grinning ear to ear, and he's like no longer upset, and it was really great. And I was like, "Oh, that's so nice. How did you do that?" And she was like, "Oh, I gave him some of your caramel slice." And I literally said, "I was saving that." Like, I actually kind of lost it. Like, I lost it temporarily. Just for like a second. But there was like a real flash in my eyes because I could see. You know what I mean? I could see it reflected in her face.
Hey, for first time listeners, Ben, how old are you in human earth years?
I'm 33 years old.
That is incredible to me.
your son obviously had no understanding that his father was trying to save that caramel slice for later. He couldn't possibly have comprehended that.
Well, that's surely. That's why I wasn't annoyed at him, Michael. I was annoyed at my wife.
Is this going to become a real like issue between you two? Is this a lasting thing? If anything, it's going to be an issue, but in the opposite way than some people would think, because I think Anya has every right to really hold this over you now and question who she's decided to spend her life with and raise her kids with.
Sure, sure. I mean, absolutely. I shameful as the initial response was, I backed down immediately. was extremely penitent.
What do you want, a fucking certificate, dude? Yeah.
offered even more of the slice to Moses. You know, potentially quite performatively.
You're more sliced than Moses. Yeah. Why would that have
performatively
helped?
You know what I mean? Well, because I wanted to say, no, he can have as much as he wants, you know?
No. You know what? I don't actually need the whole slice. You know, I've thought of, yeah. I was out of line a little bit. Mo, if you want the slice, you can have it. It's no sweat off my back. It's all good.
We'll just sit here, Moses, and you can eat the whole fucking thing. Is that what you want, Moses? Is that what you want, my son, Moses?
Because, you know, I'm planning on running into somebody like a big fucking idiot later, and I guess I won't have any slice to calm me down, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's the reason, Ben. It's definitely not because you get cranky without your 3 p.m. daily caramel slice top up.
Well, Ben, if you keep up that caramel slice habit, this could be something you want to use. Mm-hmm. This is probably a bit too dark. Sorry about that. This is from Marla, and it's free casket to a good owner.
Okay.
I will sell this for $500, or you can meet the stipulations. So, first of all, if you want a casket for $500, you can have it. Otherwise, there are stipulations. Okay. And you could meet those instead.
Okay.
Coffin. Free to a local vampire group in Houston. That's the stipulation. Unless you are aware of or a member of a local club, do not contact me. I will need to research the group before I agree. It is a mid-70s casket, like new, used once for a family viewing. I have been using it as a coffee table for years. Sturdy and heavy as shit. Serious supplies only. Please reread the posting stipulations.
So I guess my first question has to be for both of you. What is a local vampire group in or out of Houston?
Man, you would be hard-pressed to find a vampire in the Lone Star State, because maybe I'm basing this on TV and movies. I've never been to Texas, but it looks like there's a lot of sunlight there. And the one thing I know about vampires is they don't like that.
Yeah.
Where was the television series True Blood set? Was that set in Texas?
In Louisiana, I think.
Oh, okay.
But even still, I just don't think the south of America is necessarily where I think of a thriving local vampire community, despite the runaway success of HBO's True Blood.
Right. Where would you? What kind
Transylvania,
of
Transylvania, Michael? Transylvania is where I would imagine
the great state of Transylvania. At the moment, interestingly, have a Republican governor but a democratically controlled state house.
It would be fantastic. You know, during the conventions where they do the roll call of states and it's like fucking Ohio, whatever, the Calamari state or whatever, and they just got to blah, Transylvania, the Joe vampire Biden. State.
Do you think that
18 votes?
Do you think that the people of Transylvania have a real love-hate relationship with the estate of Bram Stoker? Because as far as I'm aware, he just kind of picked a name out of a fucking hat. Like, do you know what I mean?
Is Transylvania a real place? Is it a real place?
Are you kidding me? Okay, you know what? You know what? I was gonna get all high and mighty about this, but just this morning I asked if Mongolia was still a place. So I can't really get too high and mighty.
So where is Transylvania, Ben? If you're such
it's
a fucking
in Romania,
expert, Ben?
Yeah, it's in Romania.
Right.
Okay. Here's the thing: I don't think I could find Romania, much less Transylvania, on a map. I'd point to the Balkans and be like that general area, but I wouldn't be able to confidently locate the hometown of Dracula.
It's kind of like us with Lord of the Rings.
Is it though? Because that was going to be my question. Because, like, in some ways you're getting a lot of tourism dollar from that, but also I imagine there's a little bit of, what's the emotion we're looking for there? Resentment or?
It's definitely resentment. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Both at ourselves and at the tourism industry, which is fueling any kind of GDP growth we get quarter on quarter here. Because,
I don't really associate New Zealand with The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings outside of a film production context, though. Like, obviously, it was really? Where the place it was where it was filmed.
Hey, what
but I don't
other
think of New Zealand
sorry,
as being like innate. Yeah,
outside
sorry.
Of a film production context, what other context is there? Like, nobody actually thinks Middle Earth is there.
No, I'm just saying, I'm just saying that, like, I as an intelligent adult, can separate the fact that, you know, Lord of the Rings was filmed in New Zealand from the idea that I would sort of call New Zealanders hobbits or something. Like, I think it's fundamentally different from Transylvania, where it's it's not so much that the Dracula film or whatever was, or the book was written in Transylvania. It's that the book supposes, the premise of the book is that Transylvania is ruled over by a Dracula, a vampire of sorts. So it actually speaks to the outside so world, pedantic. National character, their idea of the national character of Transylvania.
Have you read, there's no shame here. Question number one, Michael, have you read Dracula?
I think I studied it in year 11, which means I'd never read it.
Question number two.
You saw the movie.
Yeah.
What do you suppose the plot of Dracula is?
It's you know, there's this vampire hunter or something, and he goes to an old castle, and then I think there's a lady called Mina, and she's also there.
You're looking at your computer screen. Like, how did you think you could pull this off with a webcam trained on you?
And look, I will say, all right, fine.
I assume it is a book that was written in 1796.
And somehow I know that it's never been out of print.
It's here in my brain.
Quite rare for a book. I don't remember a lot of the plot of Dracula, the original book. But for the additional source materials we could use for our English class in year 11, we were allowed to use the Leslie Nielsen, I think, film, Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Yeah, Mel Brooks
film. So with Leslie Nielsen, kind of aware of that more.
Do you know that I remember when I first watched Dracula Dead and Loving It, I was probably 10 or 11, and I actually could not fathom that a movie could be that funny. Like,
wow.
I remember having like a weird kind of out of body experience, being like, how can they keep it's hit after hit after hit?
I remember having a slightly different experience watching that as a young boy. I remember being like, and look, this is probably a bit of TMI, but I remember being incredibly horny watching that film. Because there's some quite horny parts in it.
Leslie Nielsen is a silver fox.
I want to be clear. It wasn't Leslie Nielsen, and it wasn't the man eating bugs. These were not things that I found horny. There was other horniness in there.
I remember that because I was also of the age where, like, I was kind of embarrassed to be watching those scenes with my parents. But there's scenes where, like, the ladies kind of pour at Renfield and they look all sexy. I recall this too. Formative, I would say.
And now, have I grown up now with a fantasy of me wanting to be taken by vampire women? I mean, look, how could I even?
Can I beg of you to stop talking? Can I interject here to beg of you to stop talking?
Well, how could I even have that happen? How could I even? How could I even possibly arrange that as an occasion unless I was part of a local vampire group?
That's true, and you'd need a kind of coffin for you to hide in, and or for them to hide in, and then to leap out. And then point at your boner.
Which brings me back to your original question. What is a local vampire group? I think it's a secret sex party. That's my big understanding of what it is.
As with so many things online and in this podcast, I do think this comes back to swingers. I think, unfortunately, a lot of roads do lead to swingers.
But, like, what is the utility of a coffin in that context? Because, I'm going purely on the statistical information. Texans are big people. A coffin is designed for one moderately sized person.
Well, hang on
a sec. What sort of sexual acts? You're gone.
Hang on a sec. You've said that Texans are a big people, so therefore a Texan coffin would reflect that.
Probably.
Yeah. Although maybe people were skinnier in the 70s because it's a mid-70s casket, like new.
Possibly. I do wonder if you could even just have it as a prop. No one has to go in the coffin. You can just sort of look at it.
You can look at it and jerk off.
I think the person who's got it as a coffee table, we're all looking at them being like, that's so morbid, that's awful, this is the complete wrong way. No, they've got it right. We're all the fucking idiots. I've never understood why we get this hard to biodegrade box that's like varnished with poison and put it in the dirt with a bunch of other boxes Chuck us in cardboard, eh?
How do you want to go? How do you want
to
go?
Fire me at the Sun. Fire me at the Sun. I want it to be so expensive and make no sense. I want to be fired at the Sun by a rocket.
You're making an environmental argument against the use of coffins, but you want to be fired at launch velocity, at escape velocity away from the Earth into the Sun.
Well, no, he said at
the Sun. Here's what you're forgetting.
Technically, I could just catapult him sort of, you know.
And this is what I want. I want the world's largest trebuchet, which can not only hoist me into out of orbit, but other bodies as well. Reusable.
I mean, say what you will about trebuchets. They really are carbon neutral. Once you've made it, I mean, it costs nothing to fire, you know?
That's true.
Exactly.
Did I tell you, Tim Bat? I probably haven't, but I once went to a funeral of like this this comedy guy who was like a big comedy guy in the 80s here and kind of gave a lot of people their starts, co-founded the Melbourne Comedy Festival, that sort of thing. And so at his funeral, it was like a lot of comedians there, and we shot him out of a cannon into the Pacific Ocean.
Truly.
Yeah, but I mean, it was like a lot of his ashes. It wasn't like his corpse. But,
right. I genuinely, like, I'm quite a visual person. I was with you. I was surrounded by a lot of, like, ill-fitting suits from, I don't know what the Australian equivalent of Hallensteins is. Lowe's. You got Hallensteins?
Lowe's.
Okay, Lowe's. A lot of Lowe's suits, a lot of people not earning enough to, like, get proper dress shoes, just trying their best to put on what's appropriate for a funeral. And then a corpse kind of being projected, but not completely well, out of a cannon and then just falling into some water.
I don't know.
Legally, is that allowed? Legally, no, would you be legally? Do you have to burn the corpse into ashes before you can fire it into the ocean?
Apparently, they weren't even allowed to fire the ashes into the ocean. But
yeah.
But their thinking was, what are you going to do?
You can arrest the ashes. Good luck.
I don't know if I've told the story on the podcast. I doubt I have. But at that funeral, had one of the most surreal and incredible comedy moments of my life, where everybody was giving eulogies to this guy, and like his family were there, who were just like normal people. And then it was like a bunch of like generations and generations of comedy people, all the way up to like people who were there, like who were in their 70s and 80s. And so like after a couple of nice eulogies from his family and like one or two nice eulogies from comics, this comedian called Rod Quantock gets up and goes like, do you know what? I think John would be absolutely disgusted by this. This is all far too civil. So I'll say it. John was a cheap bastard. And everybody laughs and like claps. And then another comic is like, yeah, real talentless hack. And then everybody laughs and claps. And then another comic who has not read the room and is like probably the drunkest I've ever seen a person goes, yeah, he was a pedophile. And the room goes completely silent except for me and Jordan Raskopoulos at the back, who laughs so hard that we have to leave.
Oh man,
it was honestly one of the greatest moments of my life.
Fuck, that's good.
Heckling someone at their funeral as a pedophile as a joke is incredible. It's just incredible commitment to a bit.
Tim, do you have one you want to share with the class?
I'd love to, actually. Let me rip into an ad here from Auckland Craigslist. I'm with Titanic Truths, capitalized, I hasten to add. This isn't in the ad. I'm telling you what the punctuation is on the page. Both T's are capitalized.
Oh, so we think it's some an organization. Sort of potentially vampire adjacent.
It could be. I'm with Titanic Truths in the US, and I've heard reports that a model of Titanic may be housed at an amusement house. I assume it's supposed to be housed. May be housed at an amusement park there in NZ. I would like to know if this is true and where it is located. There is a possibility that the model may be of some significance, and we would like to either confirm or debunk these ideas. These ideas? If anyone has any information, please email. Thanks.
Okay, so first of all, Tim Bat, New Zealand's own Comedy Sun, are you aware of any theme park in New Zealand that has a model of the Titanic?
To South Auckland.
By the way, that was sent in by Hannah Burgess, Hall of Cowards MVP, Hannah Burgess. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Hannah.
Thank you, Hannah. There is a theme park which should be condemned, to be honest, and has been by the general public, but not by the authorities who can genuinely shut it down, called Rainbow's End, which has been around for time immemorial here in God's own. I think God created the Kiwi, and then he was like, this little stupid bird that can't fly has got to have something to do. I'm going to make a very dangerous theme park for it. And it's got a ship in it that, like, it's just a big rocking ship. You sit in the ship and it rocks to and fro.
Like a pirate ship, right? Yeah.
On one swivel, like it's a clock, like the hands of a clock, right? Like a pendulum.
You got it.
Pendulum is what I'm trying to talk
about. It's a pendulum they've painted to look like a pirate ship. That's exactly it. That is the closest thing I can think of to being a model of the Titanic that could be of some significance at a New Zealand theme park. What could that even mean? Like, model would need to exist of the Titanic?
What
is it proving or disproving?
Well, we'd need the podcast's Titanic expert, Carlo Ritchie, to properly engage with that. But without him, I think one of the conspiracy theories around the Titanic is that the Titanic didn't sink at all.
I've talked to him at length about this, and I love it. I love bringing it up, and I love hearing what he has to say.
So can you explain this theory to me? Because I tend to just completely tune out, I'll be honest.
So, I have to preface this by saying I'm devastatingly hungover and exhausted. I've done 4 gigs this weekend, stand-up gigs, after doing no stand-up for 3 months. And I, celebrated after the Friday night by getting plastered and then had to do a repeat on Saturday. And now I'm a shell of a man. So I'll try and continue piecing the details together. There was a sister ship to the Titanic that was made at the same time. So the story goes, and Carlo Ritchie has done his research on this, J.P. Morgan, I think potentially the world's richest man at the time, concocted a kind of insurance scheme by sending the sister ship out and convincing everyone it was the Titanic and sinking it and made a tremendous amount of money.
So I assume the reason he did this, by the way, I just remembered we danced around this the last time we had you on the podcast, but didn't get into it. So I'm very glad that we've actually managed to pin this down. So am I to understand that the reason that he did the decoy ships is because the payout on the Titanic would be higher? Because obviously if any ship
sinks, I can't remember that, but...
So
I remember.
It was switched with another ship called the RMS Olympic. I think I remember that from Carlos.
The Olympic was struck by a naval vessel, and the Navy was never going to pay out for the damages. So we had one defective damaged ship and one perfectly fine ship. So they did a switcheroo to sink the one that had already sustained massive damage because he knew it was going to fuck out at some point anyway.
So hear me out here.
Wow.
You're J.P. Morgan, the world's richest man. You've pulled off the insurance heist of the century, and there's one loose end you've got to tie up. Where do you put the actual Titanic? The Titanic that didn't sink.
I guess you get a shrinking ray and then move it to New Zealand, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
We don't know that the model is small.
This could be a one-to-one. So you get on the blower to the worst theme park in the world and you say, would you like a model of the Titanic that went down? Did you hear about that? Very sad. Would you like a model of it? Ship it off. Never heard from again. Do you think that's what they're trying to confirm or deny?
1,000%, because that is literally the best place you could put it. It is a combination of hiding something in plain sight and that it is surrounded by the public at all times so you don't think of anything of it. But it's also in the fucking asshole end of the... It's in New Zealand. No one's going to think to look there. You kidding me?
It's the same...
Especially 100 years ago.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, I think we're onto something here. And also, it being a model is the perfect crime. Because people are like, well, look, this is actually the Titanic. You're like, yeah, I know, it's a really good model. It's like, no, but the fixtures and fittings are like, yeah, it's a really, really good model.
Great job. I hear you. The model makers really nailed it.
I will pass on your congratulations to the model makers. I think we've cracked it, guys. I think we've absolutely cracked it.
All right. Well, I'll make sure that I email back that poster on Craigslist. So thanks, Hannah, for connecting the dots there between us and them and Titanic truths in the US.
Ben, do you have one for us?
I do. This is taken from Craigslist, and it's taken from the Brooklyn area, and it's called Looking for a Big Muscular Person to Insult My Artwork Online.
Hell yeah.
Hell of a kink.
This is in some ways, I think, worse than this being a kink. I am an artist and writer currently working on a joke that goes something like, I used to say I was my own biggest critic. Then this guy came along And then I post a screen cap of your social media profile, name and info blurred, unless you have a public-facing account, aggressively insulting my work with a picture of you and a copy of my latest book. Either Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter would be great. I'll write some material for you to post. You can adjust it to make it sound like you. It would be very specific criticism about the nuances of comic book coloring, which may seem out of place in the rest of your timeline. Just a heads up. Blah, 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 wow. blah. Yes, I'm orchestrating this whole thing for a single joke on the internet. I've done it before and I'll do it again. Thank you.
Signed,
this isn't a joke.
Conan O'Brien. Wow.
This is like a, this is like a, this is a false flag operation.
This is a comedic false flag.
I am so angry about this. Why the fuck would you think that you have to live out a comedic premise to tell it on stage?
Exactly.
What?
Oh, sorry. By the way, I missed some admin. He'll get a copy of the book. If you want to do this, Tim Bat, you'll get a copy of the book and $25 upon completion of the post.
Ooh. I'm so angry.
That's the thing.
I don't know why this has made me so viscerally pissed off, but just like you've completely misread Housestead. We don't fuck. Oh, I'm so mad and hungover. I mean,
we've all been doing stand up comedy in some way or the other for quite a while. Has anybody ever asked you for receipts on the story that you've told on stage?
I think maybe that's why I'm getting so angry. Thank you, Ben, for kind of like digging around and unpacking this. It's because I think we all, even if it's implicit, sign up to the social contract that the audience is going to a show to be entertained and perhaps some stories may have been embellished.
Yeah.
And the comedians in turn know that they have a responsibility to, on occasion, embellish real world events for entertainment value. And the fact that
that premise makes my blood boil. I don't go to a comedy club to be lied to, Tim Bat. If he's going to all this trouble, though, because you can very easily just, like, he's scripting this, so he knows what he wants it to say. He could very easily just mock this up himself, right? So what do you think?
But the problem is, if you use stock images, Ben, you get caught. People are like, oh, really? Who told you to get fuck? Who told you to get fuck off? Is it this person who's also in this ad for cornflakes?
See, in his mind, I think that's what he thinks the audience is going to be thinking. So I reckon his bit is going to be like, well, I used to think I was my own bit as critic. Then this guy came along, posted up there, right? It's him. It's somebody saying, hey, go suck a fuck. Your coloring's really bad or whatever. And then he goes, and look at the guy, clicks on his profile and goes, he's muscular. And then goes, and I'll just run that through reverse Google image search.
Exactly. A $25 plus book stitch up to potentially ruin a person's life who's trying to do you a solid. That's cooked.
And he's like, you know, and I'll just also like have a look at, say, you can scroll here and you can see that he's posted other things. So he's not just a sock puppet account, if that's what you're concerned about. You know, get him on the phone. What's that? Get him on the phone. All right, I'll call him up then. Because also, like, going to this length is more suspect than lying. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, there's something psychologically off. Also, I would argue that, like, maybe this is bougie, but $25 seems like not enough money for this much shit to do.
Well, also, this guy seems like he's going to be incredibly fucking needy. Like, I think there'd be $25 in emotional labor right there, at least.
Well, yes.
I'm interested in knowing, because does he say in the ad that the criticism will be very specific? What's the wording there, Tim?
He says, I will write some material for you to post. You can adjust it to sound more like your own words.
Right. Okay.
It will be very specific criticism about the nuances of comic book coloring. Yeah, this is really pissing me off, guys.
Yeah, that's actually, now it's getting set because now I'm thinking of who this person is. You know, I'm building a bit more of a picture in my head and it's bleak on a number of levels, but the one I want to pay particular attention to is that he's like, I know that this is going to be worth the payoff and everyone is going to get my very specific self-generated, however slightly augmented critique of my comic book drawing style.
Yeah.
And this is what's going to launch me as a star.
You know,
there's a lot going on here, right? I think that this guy is obviously insecure on some level about his comic book coloring ability. And what he's doing to cover that up is trying to get, he's like, if I orchestrate the insults first, then if you then later on criticize my coloring style in this comic book where I've made everyone blue or some shit,
yeah,
right? And everyone's going to be annoyed that, Captain America is blue skinned or something, whatever the fuck. And if you get on board and criticize me, you'll actually be publicly teaming up with this very muscular person over here who I've already slammed, you know? I've already let the cat out of the bag with this.
Fuck.
Do you want to associate with this man?
I think that's the second part of this. I think that's the second part of this thing. I think he's setting himself up for an alley-oop. I think he's asking this guy to do like a really specific bit of wording, which he's gonna retort for. Do you know what I mean? Like he's gonna be like, it's like a Les Winans situation, is what I'm saying.
Also, could you change your social media name to
Les Winans?
The man from Enos. Yeah.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if you tuned in, like if you can rewind the podcast about 25 seconds and really turn the volume up, you will hear the gears turning on three comedians trying to think of a comic book artist's name that they could generate a pun out of. Yep. I couldn't even get the first bit of that, man. Yep. Not in my wheelhouse.
I've got like a bookcase behind me and I was like really squinting to see if I could see any comic books on it.
How do you get bad at color? Like art style I get, but bad at comic book coloring? Yeah. Am I just totally out of the loop on how the art form works, or is it
hardly
to be
bad
at?
The loop there.
Yeah,
you're very
much out of the loop. Please don't
there
email,
are colorists.
Guy.
That's their entire job, email is just
guy.
Coloring in the bits.
Yeah, email guy.
leave me the person who brought it up out of this.
Yeah, but email guy. Let's do that because he's Satan's own podcaster.
Fucking A. Let's get it started.
It would be really good. Can we give out Guy's email address on air just so that all complaints in the future are forwarded to him? That's a
Guy,
funny bit,
Guy
isn't it?
Guy tried to give out his home address on air the other day and I had to bleep it out for his own good. Hey, guys, do you want one more to take us home? Do you want one more to take us home? This is
I'd love to hear it.
This is from Perth Marketplace on Facebook and it is $90 Australian and it is celebrity ventriloquist doll. And looking at it, it's just like it's a ventriloquist doll in a package that's kind of see-through. And it says, opened once, never again, want it gone ASAP, no negotiations, DM for pickup details and other information.
That's been said in by Alison Obzansky. Thank you, Alison.
Thank you, Alison.
Wow. Okay, so...
Sorry, can I just drill down? Because there's three possibilities for a celebrity ventriloquist dummy.
I'm so
Number
glad you
one,
guessed.
That it is a dummy of a celebrity. Mm-hmm, number two, that it is a dummy formerly owned by a celebrity. Or number three, that the doll itself, for some reason, is itself a celebrity.
Okay, so looking at... Because the photos aren't great, but one of them I can kind of see the face of the dummy. I'm ruling out option two, that this was like Kevin Spacey's, but why did I pick someone who's a rapist? I could have done...
I don't know why as well, but I just started watching again before I clicked onto you guys. his fucking weird ass Christmas Eve video that he made out when came out and he's like, you know what'll solve this?
So
me
creepy.
Being Frank Underwood to an iPhone scripted myself to suggest I absolutely did it. And if I ever go before a jury of my peers, they will lock me up for life.
Do you know what's
fucking
also bizarre?
Creepy.
One of the most incredible things about that is if you actually look at it, there's definitely a sound operator. There's definitely like a set dresser. Like there are at least three people in the room with him in order to make that. And none of them felt empowered to be like, hey, man, are you sure this is really? So anyway, look, it's possible that it's Kevin Spacey's ventriloquist dummy. Right? Or let's just...
I like that we're sticking with Kevin Spacey. I like you haven't moved on.
I couldn't.
A real option for you to pick another name there, Ben. No. Yep.
but I don't think that's particularly likely. I don't... It's definitely not the first thing. It's not a recognizable celebrity. It's not like Now I can think of Tom Hanks. Doesn't look like Tom Hanks.
It could be. Looking at it, it's kind of like a classic ventriloquist doll.
Well, that's the
thing. Like a
Why
Gabba
did you pick two pedophiles? Shout out to all our QAnon crossover audience.
So yeah, I would say that it's possibly a famous ventriloquist dummy, in that it just looks like the, you know, Pictionary version, draw a ventriloquist dummy. It's got slicked down black hair, big rosy cheeks, yeah, huge smile, penciled sort of eyebrows. If you close your eyes, think of a dummy, it's that one.
It kind of looks like Jimmy Carr, actually, which makes me think that either Jimmy Carr is a... I mean, I'm sure this has probably been said before, but is it possible Jimmy Carr is a ventriloquist dummy brought to life? Or do you think, because he says quite like risque, nasty things about people,
sure,
do you think part of the comedic, theory of what makes Jimmy Carr funny is that he looks a little bit like a doll, and the back of your head, you're like, the doll shouldn't be saying that.
Can we go for three famous pedophiles and suggest that Jimmy Savile is actually controlling Jimmy Carr?
Wow. Well, I mean, personally, I don't know why this podcast has become like pedophile central this episode.
This episode will be titled "The Following People Are Rumored to Be Pedophiles."
Let's get back to this. Opened once, never again, which suggests that either
really got me.
Someone opened this and was like, "Oh, this." They've used it once. Be like, no, this isn't for me. I was an idiot. I thought I could do it, but I just don't have the stones. I should have learned when I was a kid.
These old hands
can't operate the hand anymore.
No, well, that's possible. that is possible. But I want you to the follow up sentence. Open once, never again. Want it gone ASAP. Does to me suggest that it wasn't that he was bad at it, unless he was so bad at it that he wants it out of the house because it's an enduring monument to his failure as a ventriloquist. And like,
do you think this man, and you can see from the profile photo that's a man, put his hand into the doll took over, he said some horrifying things he can't take back,
yeah,
and he's like, oh no, the power that is wielded.
This is my exact thinking.
Holy shit. Do you think that ventriloquism might make like a late return?
It already has,
in 2021.
The most, I would say probably in the top five most successful comedians on the planet, one of them is a ventriloquist. There is.
Who have I met? Who is it?
That guy who does the terrorist puppet.
Ahmed the Dead Terrorist, and
his name is
Straussman, maybe? I think.
Jeff Dunham. Jeff Dunham. It is insane.
Oh, right,
to me.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It is insane to me that ventriloquism is still a thing. It was like ventriloquism to me was like when people were like, that train's coming out of the screen, gonna kill us, stupid. You know what I mean?
Are you saying you've never seen a ventriloquist act and like lost your fucking mind? Because I definitely have.
I've
lost my mind of ventriloquism before.
I am not a clever man. I'm willing to absolutely wear that, but I have never lost my mind over ventriloquism act. No, not even.
I feel like in the mid 2000s, maybe the late 2000s, I saw a British ventriloquist by the name of Nina Conti, I think.
Yep, that's her name.
And I remember going in incredibly cynical. And I remember going like, oh, ventriloquism, this is going to be a load of wank. And then walking out being like, well, that's the greatest art form of all time.
Who cares about anything else? You are so easily swayed. You are so easily swayed by this. Oh, man. Tim, have you never shared a bill with a ventriloquist?
Absolutely not. I won't stand for it. We had Stressman on TV in New Zealand for like, I want to say about 8 years. He just kept like saying he was going and then coming back with a slightly rebranded show. And I can't even, like, it was a weird line of ventriloquism is usually your ticket to say incredibly outrageous stuff because you are relegating the responsibility of the words to this external force that has to, you know, bear no consequence.
It's
but we all Stressman agree. Was is a different person that has its own mind.
Yeah. Well, once again, it comes back to the social contract thing, which is a horrible like tool for just essentially laundering hate speech on stage in the wrong hands, which is why I'm worried about it coming back now, because I feel like with this alt-right takeoff that's happening at the moment, one of those fuckers is going to figure this out and become a really successful ventriloquist act. But we had Strassman on who like was just okay at ventriloquism. Like he was fine, not the world's greatest, but also his comedy was pretty, it had to be pretty broad and not that blue because it was on TV. So it was just kind of nothing, but it was good enough for New Zealand to keep paying for it for a decade.
It was sort of adding an extra superfluous step. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I worry about that too, because I feel like maybe people will try and, you know, get ahead of being cancelled by having a ventriloquist dummy, because I think that'll like just buy you a little bit of time.
That's what Kevin Spacey should have done. He should have reinvented his career as a ventriloquist.
I love the idea of somebody like buying themselves like a week where like everyone's like, I can't believe that puppet said that. And then like there's that Twitter storm for like a week canceling the puppet. And then someone's like, we're having the wrong conversation, guys.
Wait a minute. Hey, what are you looking up? You
actually,
look like you are
puppets
so
only say offensive
research.
Things when they're distressed, guys. So please, all right? Please.
Tim Batt, it's been such a joy having you on. What a guy. What a person.
It's great to be here. It truly is.
Tim, are you making anything at the moment that people can check out?
Doing The Worst Idea of All Time with a person you may have heard of called Guy Montgomery. We're back for our fifth season. Previously, we have watched and reviewed the same movie every week for a year. But this time, we're changing it up and we're watching the entire back catalogue of Emmanuel softcore pornography films, because there's over 50 of them.
And these are like French films that like started out potentially with artistic aspirations or...
Started French and started good and quickly became neither of those things. So we're almost up to the point where Emmanuel, the franchise goes to space, and I cannot wait. It's going to be sensational. We've got a Patreon, and we're doing an exclusive locked off podcast series on there, because we feel like if it's in the general public, we'll potentially be brought in front of a court of our peers.
Sure.
Called Killionaire. And the premise is we're trying to create the world's first trillionaire to murder them as a symbol. And our sights are firmly set on Mr. Jeff Bezos, because he's currently the closest to the finish line. So we want to accelerate his wealth to get him to a trillion as quick as possible and then construct the guillotine.
Have you considered having just a couple of puppets as buffers legally in case the courts come after you? Because also I was
this
thinking,
is very good.
Yeah, if you give that puppet a puppet, that's another kind of, that's just another. I mean,
Jordan's puppets all the way down. Come get me, lawyers. Fight with your best shot. I mean, you want nothing but dummies.
I have been ring-fenced by a series of completely articulated puppets.
Do you know, I feel like in the Trump era, all bets are off, and this might be a legitimate legal defense now, to just get a sequence of puppets to shield yourself legally from libel and slander.
This is the thing. I can't believe in my fraudulent Senate campaign I ran a year ago, I cannot believe that I didn't think to be a ventriloquist during that. I would have been elected.
You had a lot of balls in the air. You did well.
You did really well, man. Let's not relitigate
that. Fucking infuriated.
If you want more of this bullshit or just want to support us, you can go to our Patreon. You don't have to listen to the bonus episodes. If what we put out to the general public is sort of filling your bullshit quotient to the brim.
It's a self-loathing plug.
If you want, I don't know. Fuck. If you despise yourself enough to give us money, well, who are we to stop you?
Legally, we can't. Legally, we can't stop you giving us money. And we're about $700 of the way through to our Patreon goal of about $1,500 to
do a deep dive into the MCU,
into the McDonald's plan universe.
Yeah, the McDonald's Land Cinematic Universe, which I think we decided would involve us watching some of the whole of the new rebooted McDonald's Land series. Which Hing, when we I don't know, I didn't listen to you the first time, but when I was playing back that episode, I realized there are six seasons of that. So
There's a lot.
Again, if you're a little strapped for cash, don't worry about it at just this second. But Tim Batt, lovely having you as always. Michael Hing, have you got something fun planned for this week?
Do I? Just the grind of the radio show. It just keeps on going, and it never ends. Trying to fill, God. 12 to 15 hours of week. Of radio a week when there is nothing happening in the world. You'd love to be on air being like, anyway, what about this?
Just shoveling content into the maw of the monster that eats time.
Would you have me on to talk about how we could murder Jeff Bezos?
Well, legally it's a little tricky, but we'd have a puppet on potentially.
Nice.
What I am doing this week is we set up a recording. I think I mentioned this previously on an episode. I've been reading out excerpts from my teenage diary on the radio, and this week I'm pitching that to the ABC as a television series. And you know, we'll see how that goes. I imagine they'll love it. But we have got meetings with some executives, and I think it'll be funny. I think the pitch will be funny.
I did catch a video on Facebook of you reading about a love triangle you were involved in when you were like 13 or 14, and that was bleak as shit, man. That is some good ass content. Yeah, that's off to you.
Well, until next week, bye.
Bye. If you like pina coladas,
hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.